What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, and wrestling fans of all shapes and sizes. Once again, it is I, the dad bod, Matt Knight, joining you in the Checkmate Studios with Mr. Roadhouse. And as you can see, we have a little bit different setup here. That is my belt. If anybody wants to challenge me for it, the dad bod is here for it. So do you want to tell us a little bit about our setup that we have tonight?
So as you can see, we do have an open seat, and it is actually reserved for somebody that we have been super excited about having on the podcast for, I would say, since its conception now.
Yeah, definitely since its conception. We have had one half of Master and Machine, the tag team partners, and now we have the Master, hailing from Greensboro, North Carolina, 5 foot 10 inches tall, the current PWF heavyweight champion, Mr. Marcus Cross.
Boom. God, it's so pretty.
His does weigh quite a bit more than my replica title.
For sure.
I think his is the actual, probably 25 pounds of gold there.
Yeah, so, you think?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
What's up, guys?
What's up, man? Welcome, brother.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited for this. Ever since you guys started this, I know you've been wanting to get me on for a while, and I used to be from here, but it's been a while since I've actually, you know, been around Winston. Yeah. I got family here, so as soon as I got the opportunity to come on this podcast, I was excited. I got to go see some family members and some friends, and now I'm happy to be here, guys.
Sweet. Made a whole trip out of it, huh?
Thank you so much. Yeah,
absolutely. Awesome. Well, I know that we have a couple of topics that we were wanting to discuss. First and foremost, I just want to kind of ask you, tell us about where your love for wrestling came from and how you kind of, we got a little bit of the backstory from Griff, but I want to hear it more from your side. How did you, like, did you see, a wrestling show live or on TV and it automatically clicked, you fell in love? How did you get in the business?
So we're going way back. All right, we're starting from the beginning. Oh,
the dawn of time.
Well,
sir.
We're going to need some clarity, too, on a story. Griff said that you were getting your ass kicked in the bathroom in high school, and he came in at the knight in shining armor and basically took some trash cans, wailed on these boys. I can't remember the guy's name, but.
I can't either. But I will tell you, Griff was very explicit at saying F you to that guy.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think I remember the story a little bit better than Griff, but we'll see. If you get us both on here at the same time, our brains will meet and it'll be a good time. But
you hear that, guys? Let's all comment and share this and say we want both Master and Machine at the same time. Go ahead, Marcus.
So, well, okay. If we're going back to just that story, how me and Griff met.
Yeah.
We were in the same home economics class in the seventh grade. So, you know, we were taking care of doll babies. We were cooking muffins. We were, you know, doing all that good stuff.
One of my favorite classes, might I add, too.
Dude, I love it. I mean, a little too much science for me. It's just like baking's too much. I just kind of like throw everything together. And if it's fluffy, it's fluffy. If it's flat, it's flat. But
as long as it tastes good, babe.
Exactly. So
that's what she said.
Okay, this is going to be a great night. So I went to the bathroom. I just like took a little potty break. And there were some guys in there. And here's the thing. Ever since I was little, I've done martial arts.
Okay.
So I'm actually a fourth degree black belt in Taekwondo. Mm-hmm. At this point, I think I had just probably gotten my first black belt. I was probably working toward my second black belt. I was maybe like 12 or 13 years old.
Is this high school or is this still
middle school?
Okay.
Yeah, I was probably like 12, 13 years old, seventh grade, I think. And so we were in the same class. I went to the bathroom and there were some guys. And Griff had actually gone to the bathroom before me, I think. And I didn't know that. We actually weren't even friends at the time. We were just kind of like in the same class as each other. So, and there were some guys in there that I had seen. I mean, you know, middle schoolers, they hang out in the bathroom, whatever.
Absolutely.
It's not weird. But
it's the cool thing to do.
So there's this gang of like three kids. And one of them I thought, you know, was kind of my friend. And then they started joking with me and they're like, oh, we're going to give Marcus a swirly. And I was like, okay, I thought this was like something that only happens in movies and shows and stuff. You didn't think it was real. So I'm like, haha, you guys are messing around. The one guy actually bear hugs me and grabs me from behind. And he starts dragging me into the stall. And there's three of these guys and one of me. And Griff was in there just washing his hands. And he's actually getting ready to like step out and leave. Because, I mean, and we weren't friends. We didn't know each other.
At all.
Like
no
zero.
No kidding. Okay.
And so he saw this going down. And he was just like, Oh, they're friends, because I think he had seen me and one of the other guys like kind of hanging out before.
So kind of like a joking around, kidding thing.
Yeah. And okay. At first, that's probably what it seemed like, because mm-hmm. he started to step out and leave. And I started screaming and cussing and stuff. And so he comes back in. But by the time he comes back in, stuff had already gone down a little bit. So one guy had me like bear hugged from behind. The other guy was trying to like shove my head into the toilet. I like shake my head loose and I don't have my arms. So I headbutt this guy that's right in front of me. Boom. Like just right out of instinct. And so like immediately black belt skills kick in. I headbutt that guy. The other guy freaks out. He lets go. I send my right leg, like my heel, back into him, kick him against the wall. He's backed up. I turn to go out the stall, and the first guy that I headbutt, he's kind of like messed up, but he kicks my foot and I trip and fall, and I hit my head on the ground, like total just face bump right on the ground. There was a third guy who was videoing the whole thing, and he's like, you know, taking a video of like
world star.
Yeah, this guy's like, you know, who swirlies, whatever. And then by that point, Griff comes barging back in. He heard all the commotion. He realized what's going on. And so he starts tussling with another guy. I think he grabs the guy's phone, or because this guy's phone ended up broken and thrown in the toilet or something. I'm pretty sure Griff was like smashed his phone, threw it in the toilet. And so we start 2-on-3 handicap matching these fools. and then I think we head out. A janitor was right there and he comes in and we're like, you know, you better clean up the mess in there, big guy.
Nice.
And then we head back to home economics class, which is like, bro, we just kicked three people's ass. You know what I mean? So. And we're dapping each other up. And then not even like 10, 15 minutes later, we're sitting in home economics. The teacher gets a phone call. Send Griffin Marcus to the principal's office. Oh, darn. Here we go. So we go up there. These guys are messed up. They have bruises, you know.
Licking their wounds type thing.
There's three of them. And like they literally one guy had like welts on his back from where Griff was wailing on him. And one guy's like face is like bloodshot and you know, his face is all red. That was the guy that like I headbutt it was just crazy. And then one guy's like, yeah, and they broke my phone. And we had his parent ended up coming, like calling my parents and was like, hey, you know, you got to replace this kid's phone and all this stuff. So it ended up being a whole thing. But from that, me and Griff kind of just became friends. And in a totally unrelated circumstance, the following summer, he moved into my neighborhood. Like,
that's crazy.
Griff came from Atlanta. He grew up in Atlanta and like early years in elementary school, I think. And he was living around like his grandparents' neighborhood, probably like 20 or 30 minutes away. We didn't go to the same elementary school, but our elementary schools fed into like the same middle school. Mm-hmm. And so we were in the same middle school. And then he ended up just moving into my neighborhood one summer. And I remember I had a huge backyard. I got at least like an acre and a half of land in my backyard. I would always have, you know, kids from all around the neighborhood come over and we play football games and all that stuff and baseball games. And so I was going around the neighborhood because people would always come in and move out every summer. And I was just like getting acquainted, riding my bike around. And I saw that he was down there jumping on a trampoline with some of these guys that I used to play football with, the Goss twins. And they're crazy. And I saw them wrestling on the trampoline. And so I go down there and I'm like, holy crap, you guys like wrestling too? And then it just clicked from there. And we just started, you know, wrestling on the trampoline, you know, almost every single day throughout that summer, throughout eighth grade and into high school. And then, but before that, where my love of wrestling comes from, when I was really young, so my family actually comes from El Paso, Texas. That's where my dad was born. I got my whole dad's side of the family lives in El Paso, Texas.
Interesting.
And my grandma, so my dad's dad, was really good friends with Eddie Guerrero's mom.
And no kidding.
No, yeah, they're in the same book club or something like
wow.
that.
Wow, that's awesome.
El Paso's a big city. It's like a top 20 city in America, I think. Is it has a whole county named after it. It's El Paso County.
Right.
But it's a huge city, just like spread out over. There's literally a mountain in the middle of the city, and there's like northwest, east, south El Paso, and it's like spread around like this giant mountain, and it even like. It's almost like the same city as Juarez, because Juarez is literally just like a fence and then boom, another city, and it's Juarez is right there. It's almost like one giant city with just a fence in the middle and a mountain on the other side. It's massive. But at least the area where my grandma comes from was it's very Hispanic. And I have a little bit of Mexican in me.
I was about to say, are you of Hispanic descent?
Yeah, I have some in me. It's not full half. I think I'm like a quarter or a third or something like that, how it comes out too. But my grandma... She was best friends with Eddie Guerrero's mom. And she knew I loved wrestling. And so she would always send me these, I have in my house, like I have an old shadow box of Eddie Guerrero pictures that are signed from the El Paso Coliseum from when he was like 18 years old. I have some pictures of him in high school when he was like wrestling in like his high school scenelet. And he had his very first rival in the El Paso Coliseum was called La Mano Negra, the Black Hand. Mm-hmm. And so I got a mask. It was the mask that La Mano Negra actually wore and his black glove. And it's like all sequined and stuff in the shadow box that was hanging up in my room since I was like 10 years old. And so it's really cool. And then also my aunt, Sandy, she was actually bandmates with Vicky Guerrero. So they were actually like tight and good friends. Cool story. The first time I was at AEW, when I met Vicky Guerrero, I was so excited. And I mean, she didn't know who I was, but so I was like, I went up to her and I was like, "Hey, excuse me." And I used like her catchphrase
right,
on.
Right, right.
And she, and so I like introduced myself and I was like, "You know, you went to school with my aunt." And then she was like, "Who's your aunt?" And I was like, "Sandy." And then she immediately like remembers who it is. And she goes, "Oh," and she starts telling me stories. "We got in so much trouble because we skipped class this day and we were doing this and we pulled this prank on this teacher." And she started, and so I immediately had a great bond with Vicky like the first time I met her. It was really cool. And so Eddie Guerrero was my hero. And so being able to like hang out with Vicky and just talk to her for a little bit, it was really cool. Kind of felt connected to my hero in that way. Obviously, unfortunately, not with us, but, so I say Eddie Guerrero had a lot of inspiration on like my style of wrestling and
for sure.
Actually wanting to get into the business, especially seeing a guy, you know, who isn't he's only 5'8".
Yeah.
But I mean, he was jacked. He worked really hard. He got his character over and, you know, he ended up climbing the mountain all the way to the top despite all the problems he had. So like for me, Eddie Guerrero is just like the epitome. That's my hero. And I have familial ties and connections to him too that just makes him like my favorite wrestler and the guy that I looked up to. But yeah, it was a really good experience meeting Vicky my first time at AEW. In fact, they even had like a talent cookout that weekend. And I was just an extra talent. And she's like, "Hey, come to the cookout and we'll hang out." And all
that's amazing.
It's like a whole nother story. That cookout is crazy. But yeah, so that's kind of like where my love for wrestling originates and also how I met Griff and how we got linked up together. And then when we turned 18, we graduated high school, we both didn't really know what the heck we wanted to do.
Right.
We were just like, "Dude, we just want to wrestle. We're young. We're athletic. Let's just go for it. Let's just, you know."
All in.
Not many people follow their dreams. So why not go follow your own dream? You know, while you're young and you have the body to do it, if that's your dream, just go follow your dream, you know. And
I love it.
A lot of people will be more happy if they actually figured out what they wanted and then just try to go for it, you know. That's what you guys are doing with this podcast. You know
Absolutely.
What you want, yeah. So you're going for it. That's just, you know, what we did. We're making our way.
I'm a little bit older than you, but now that I have the dad bod to share with all the pretty girls in the front rows at these shows that there it is. But I also want to piggyback on what you said there with a little bit of the nostalgia of pro wrestling history. We're filming this today on January 27th, 2023. On today's date, 30 years ago, was the date of the unfortunate passing of Andre the Giant.
And you know, he had a ranch in North Carolina. That's where mm-hmm. Ashes. I think he had his ashes spread there at his ranch in North Carolina.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So piggybacking on, you know, following your dreams and this, that, and the other, first of all, love the message. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, so y'all made this decision and Griff was still in doing the college thing in football and was absolutely hating it. Were you doing the college thing or doing any other sports besides, you know, doing the karate and taekwondo?
I got accepted to every college I applied to. I got accepted to, except for Chapel Hill. I got accepted to NC State. I got accepted to every other school in the UNC program, Charlotte, Wilmington, Pembroke, App State. Ultimately, I didn't know what I wanted to do educationally. I had decided, you know, that actually, yeah, I hadn't really decided what I wanted to do educationally. It wasn't until I had already graduated high school going into that summer that I was like, "Hey, let's, you know, go for wrestling." But I'd say I just went to a community college. I didn't have the funds necessarily to pay to go to a four-year university.
We understand that.
I'll just go to a community college and get my associate's degree out of the way. And hopefully by that time, I'll figure out something that I want to do to end up at a university and finish up my bachelor's. Never did. Stuck with wrestling. I was teaching martial arts It was a pretty good gig for me when I decided, when I thought that wrestling was getting ready to take off for me. I moved out to Durham, Raleigh area, so I could be close to a big airport because now I'm traveling all the time. So I got to have a way to, you know, fly around. So
now, did you move out there pre or post injury?
Post injury.
Okay,
so
cool.
Once I had come back, things started taking off. I knew we were getting, you know, amazing bookings, and we started getting bookings everywhere. We had already been outside of the United States once, and that was before my injury. But, you know, things were going good with Ring of Honor, and even though Ring of Honor had closed its doors during the pandemic, you know, a lot of the Ring of Honor talent went to AEW. And, you know, we had a kind of a good run in Ring of Honor before I got, because the thing
Absolutely.
Is, I got injured at the beginning of 2020. It was January 2020 where I had my initial injury, which was 1 month after, or it was 2 months after the Briscoes match.
Mm-hmm.
So we did, you know, everything's this going on with the Briscoes. Very glad to see, you know, AEW Dynamite and Mark Briscoe getting to honor his brother, but.
Yeah, I'm glad that Fox changed up their standpoint a little bit and finally let what needed to happen happen with that episode. And the full tribute is about 3 hours long. I started watching it last night. It's up on the ROH YouTube channel. If you are a pro wrestling fan, go check that out. It's it was a really, really nice show. Also, go check out our Facebook page. I shared Marcus's tribute video. You know, I'm not going to talk too much about it because he had me in tears a little bit.
Me too.
With some of the kind words that he said about Jay Briscoe or Jammin' Pugh,
yeah.
As his real name is.
But
on a happier yeah. note, though, it seems like you've got quite a lot going on with your pro wrestling career right now. You're the PWF heavyweight champion. I see you every few weeks, it seems like, either on SmackDown or on AEW TV on YouTube or TV. And so tell us a little bit about kind of what the whirlwind has been for you here here as of late.
Right. In the last year, I've gotten a lot of opportunity. You know, I haven't had a match on AEW television yet, but I
deserve it though.
Thank you. I've had one appearance as you know, that's a whole nother story. Lance Archer pulled me over the barricade and threw me onto Eddie Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
But so I did have one appearance, and I kind of got duped into that. I didn't necessarily know that that was going to go down the way it did. I showed up, and I didn't even get a spot on Elevation or Dark tapings, and I was kind of bummed out. And this actually stems from the cookout that Vicky Guerrero right. invited me to. So me and Griff were playing cornhole, and we and Lance Archer and Dustin Rhodes, they were kicking tail in cornhole. And so, you know how the cornhole set up. So like you have one guy on either team on the same side of the board. And so I'm me and Griff, we're taking on, you know, Dustin Rhodes and Lance Archer. And I'm talking crap to Lance Archer the whole time. And I just met this guy. Granted, it's a cookout, you know, there's a few brewskis going on. And so I'm probably not really acting the best that I should as an extra talent with these main talent guys right here. But Lance took it in all fun, but I don't think he forgot, because when he found out that I didn't have a match and he showed up for that, I was like talking to my agent, Bill Behrens. That's who agents Master Machine, me and Griff. But Griff came to where I was and was like, hey, Aubrey Edwards wants to talk to you, the referee. And so I was like, okay. So I went to Aubrey and she goes, here's a ticket for a front row seat. Go sit in the front row. And then they gave me a hat and all this stuff. They're like, you don't have a spot, but you know, we're enjoy this. You know, you go sit in the front row. And so, and then, you know, the Lance Archer match happens. He grabs me from the crowd at the middle of the thing and he goes, let's go. And he throws me over and it's just crazy from there. You know what I mean?
So you had no clue.
I mean, they totally just kind of like, you know,
go for it.
Just they put me there, you know,
yeah.
Without knowing what's going on. Unfortunately, that was the match where Lance Archer got hurt.
Yeah.
He did the moonsault. But I mean, it was great up until that point. But, you know, it was kind of crazy. So I did have that appearance on AEW. And then also I was an extra on the Friday night SmackDown.
Yeah.
We wrestled the Viking Raiders and we got crushed in about 2 minutes. Me and Hunter James, or as he was on that show, he was called Tommy Gibson, and I was Jim Mulkey. So I guess I have many names.
I remember seeing that Jim Mulkey. I'm like, because you would put something on Facebook, but you know, check me out on. And I think Bill even sent something out about mm-hmm. check out Marcus Cross on SmackDown tonight. And I was like, oh, I got to make sure my DVR set at least for this one. And I saw that as, you know, Mulkey. I'm like, where in the fuck did he come up with that?
You know, it's kind of a tribute because back in the day when NWA would run in South Carolina, there was a tag team called the Mulkey Brothers. Mm-hmm. And they used to get their butts handed to them by the Midnight Express every single time they were there. But the town loved it. They had signs, Mulkey Mania is running wild. And so we were in South Carolina for that show.
Yep.
And so, you know, the town loved it. You know, I was just Jim Mulkey for a night. Had the hair and everything. I showed up with this platinum blonde hair, long flowing. I didn't have it spiked up. You know, right. Kind of like sometimes I do. It was down, and you know, it looks a little nature boyish, right? And this was the week after Ric Flair had his last match.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so that's on everybody's mind. And so the producers come up to me, and they're like, "All right, kid, you ready to cut your hair?" And I'm like, I start laughing. And I'm like, "This is a joke." And they're like, and they get serious real quick. They're like, "You think this is funny?" And I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, you seriously want me to cut my hair right now?" And they're like, "Yeah, we can't have Ric Flair's first match on Friday Night SmackDown, you know?" And I was like, "Oh, dang." So, like, they're taking everything into consideration.
Yeah.
So I was like, wait. And I put my hair up into the ponytail like how it is now. Mm-hmm. And they're like, "Fine, that'll work." And I was like, so I didn't have to
dodge
cut my
that
hair.
Bullet.
Thank God, because I wasn't about to cut my hair. That's
part of your whole gimmick.
That's whole Marcus Cross, man. You know, so but ever since then, that was the first time I ever wore my hair in a ponytail for a wrestling match. And then after that, I've had a few appearances on AEW Dark where I've had it up in a ponytail. Sometimes I'll spike it back up. You know, it's just kind of whatever mood I'm feeling in for the day. You know, if I'm in a really energized, this is a high intensity match that's about to happen, this has been building up, I'm going to spike my hair up. Yeah. I'm going to show everyone I mean business. If I'm going
super saying it.
Exactly. If I'm going to a new promotion for the first time and they're just getting a taste, you know, people might not click with that right away. So I'm going to, you know, let them
tone it down a little bit almost.
Exactly. And it can be really more dramatic when my hair is down because I'm, you know, sometimes I get the crap out of me. My hair is running into my face. If I get busted open, then that blood will start to run into my hair and people will see that. They'll get attached to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't plan on getting busted open every match, but if it does, it helps to have the hair down. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because if I'm being honest with you guys, I want you to feel bad for me when I'm getting my butt beat. So it's kind of good for you to see the blood in my hair. Just saying.
There you go.
And what we found out that you won't see that much in South Carolina shows, though, because what is the South Carolina Commission doesn't allow
any blood. It's got to completely stop the match if there's color.
Yeah. Exactly.
Something I didn't know is that each state had their own individual rules as far as their pro wrestling commission and sanction.
Every state is different. Like in North Carolina, you don't need a wrestling license. In South Carolina, you need a license, you need blood work, you need a physical. In Georgia, you don't really need any of that. I'm not licensed in Virginia. I don't know what that is. In Maryland, it's just a physical, not really any blood work, but you have to get physical paperwork done. And they also do a physical the day of the show while you're there too.
So my question then is, since you are being, you know, on some of these bigger shows such as SmackDown, AEW, is that something they all take care of? Or like wherever the show is, you have to get that license before you can be on it? Or how does that work?
So, I mean, it's kind of different depending, like when you're talking about like medical and licensing and stuff like that. For South Carolina, you need to handle all the, if you're coming in as an extra talent, like completely just independent contracted, then you have to take care of all of your medical, blood work. You have to go get a physical done, and they do a physical the day of the show too. And you have to already be pre-South Carolina licensed. So there's like, if you're coming in just to do one show for the WWE in South Carolina, you have to pass the physical and the blood work to get your license for the state of South Carolina. Then you have to pass the WWE's pre-physical. You have to pass their day of physical. Wow. You have to do the WWE's blood work. And so there's at least 5 different steps that goes into just having that one single match. But I mean, they're trying to take care of you. They're trying to make sure that, you know, you're following all the laws of the state that you're in at the time and that you're being safe according to their standards too, which they have high standards, but that's a good thing. They're really trying to protect their talent.
Keeps you clean.
Exactly.
So I kind of do want to touch on that. So obviously you've been backstage in WWE, you've been backstage in AEW, you've been backstage in ROH. Obviously, you know, I don't want you to talk about if there were anything negative that you saw, because obviously I want you to have any and all opportunities that you may have.
He's not asking for a shoot, but go for it if you have one.
Yeah, exactly. But what's the vibe and how different is it between the three, or like, how could you describe it?
Exactly. So, and keep in mind, guys, this is going to be a perspective as an extra talent, an independent talent, not someone who's directly contracted by WWE or AEW. And, you know, I've been in all three of those companies, AEW, WWE, Ring of Honor, as an extra talent. And, you know, occasionally I've had that contracted, you know, dangled in front of my face, and we'll see. But
Tony?
But I'll say that with the WWE, and granted, this was 1 week, 2 weeks after SummerSlam, maybe 3 weeks after SummerSlam, where Vince McMahon had just stepped down. And so the backstage environment that I was getting from the producers and from the talent was actually very, very relaxed compared to what I had experienced in other locker rooms and compared to the stories that I've heard. But also, this could be you're just coming off the heels of one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year, so you're past that stress and that tension. You know, you have, you know, the boss, I'm not going to say anything bad about him because he's done a lot for this business, but, you know, someone who can be very, from what I hear, micromanaging, harping on everyone, breathing down everyone's neck.
Intimidating, too. It
feels like you're walking on eggshells at all times. Just the sense that I got, and from what I heard from talking with some of the main roster talent, is it just feels much more relaxed once he was gone. Now, I don't know how that's changing now that he's, you know, stepping back into that role, but I'd say it wasn't what I expected as far as...
Just for WWE is what
you're
saying.
For WWE.
Okay.
Being in places... So our first big company we worked for was Ring of Honor. And I had some other friends that I knew because a lot of those wrestlers would also work the independent scene quite frequently. So I felt familiar. Like I knew people there already, even though I'm here just trying to get my foot in the door as an extra. There's still people here that I wrestle with on other shows. So I've shared a locker room with these people before. But at the same time, it's still a little bit tense. They're still trying to put on a TV production. And it feels like Ring of Honor really was the land of opportunity. You go there, you bust your butt, you work hard, and you can make something of yourself. And the thing is like people who were probably mid-card on that roster, they saw like if I'm not working as hard as I can, this extra who's coming in and busting his butt could probably take my spot. And that's the mentality that me and Griff had. Not that we're gonna come in and try to boot anyone off TV or take anyone's spot, but that we can be just as good as anyone here. We know that we're just as good as any team, any other wrestler. And we've thought this from a young age, from the time we started training when we were 18 years old. By the time we were like 19 and a half, going on like 20 years old, maybe right on the cusp of 21, we were like, hey, we can hang with anybody. We can go with anybody. So we're here and we're gonna try to get that spot. We're gonna try to get on TV. And we're going to try to, you know, make the most of any opportunity that's coming our way. We want to impress. You know, we want to make the big bucks. So it's very competitive.
Yeah.
Because in that locker room, they just want to put out the best wrestling product that they can. They're not married to any single idea. If something comes up that seems like it's a better idea, we're going to go that way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas in the WWE, they have a clear structure. There's a clear divide between me coming in as this talent. I'm not going to get necessarily an opportunity to step up and grab that brass ring without going through somewhere like NXT in their performance center. I show up as an extra for this event. I get a match. I'm lucky. Yay. I'm going to do the best that I can. And when I'm backstage, I'm going to talk to people like referees, like producers. I'm going to try to get emails so that I can make this contact information that hopefully I can go down to NXT at some point. I actually got an email just about 2 weeks ago saying that they wanted me to come down to New Year's Evil for the NXT show that they had. And they said, give me your shirt and pant size. We already have an idea. We have your partner. We're going to put you in a match. We have custom gear made for you already. Send me your size. My blood work wasn't up to date. My blood work was out of date by 1 week. I went to go get my blood work done. They're not going to have it back in 4 days. That was going to be the day after the event. I couldn't go.
Damn.
And the thing is, it used to be every year. You need an updated physical blood work every year. Now it's 6 months. Mm. So I had all this stuff done back in August, you know. So by the time, you know, December rolled around, the first week of January, it wasn't good anymore.
And is that all on your own dime?
Pretty much.
Okay.
But I have good insurance.
And good
that's what they say. So when you... if you want to make money in this wrestling business when you're starting out, get health insurance. Mm-hmm. Any injury, any paperwork, any physical is going to set you back.
Yeah.
So Sanjay Dutt taught me that. He was the very first wrestling seminar awesome. I ever took. He said, you want to make money in pro wrestling? You start off by getting health insurance, people.
Did he give everybody at that seminar a pencil?
God, I hope so.
I mean, he definitely had his own pencil.
So we've heard about ROH and we've heard about WWE. Now, what's that backstage dynamic in AEW? And is it a little bit different because you do have Griff there most of the time? Or even if he's not there, just like almost like a you feel more comfortable because you know a lot more of those guys type thing? Or how's that dynamic?
So with AEW, I mean, so I was injured. Griff had already been there. And this is during the pandemic. So they're only running out of Daly's place. So there's only one locker room and it's the same crowd. It's the same group of people. Whereas like now you see on AEW, you might not see someone for a few months and then they pop back up on TV, right?
Yeah.
Because they're kind of like cycling through their talent. They're giving their talent time to rest. That's honestly the great thing about AEW is like it really is good for the talent.
And that's sorry to cut you off, but that's one thing we're not heavily involved in the online community pro wrestling community because it is so toxic. But that's one thing that I keep reading is AEW can't keep a storyline running, and they all have all these talent and they're off TV all this time, and they don't understand from a talent perspective that it's best for you guys.
It's beneficial.
It's going to keep you healthier longer, and you're going to have longer careers, longer storylines that you can work. They're just like, well, it's like everything now. It's instant gratification. And I think it's a really shitty viewpoint to put on the wrestlers or even Tony Khan as a booker to say he's doing everything wrong.
Exactly. No, guys, think about it like this. Okay, Chris Jericho, that's an exception. That is not the norm, and it shouldn't be the standard. Chris Jericho's been wrestling for, almost 30 years now? Yeah. And he was doing that 300-day-a-year schedule. I mean, granted, he got to take a little bit of time off to do his rock and roll stuff, do his band, good for him, but he's still putting his body under immense pressure. And to be expected to perform not just on TV, not just once a week, but all the house shows and the live events that they do, when you're putting your body in that ring in competitive sport for 3 to 4 times a day every single week, like, it puts an immense toll on your body. So for the chance, you wouldn't expect that of MMA fighters. You wouldn't expect that of UFC fighters. They fight 3-4 times a year, right? And they get paid as much as they do, and they're entertaining. Why? Because you're invested in them. If you're really invested in these wrestlers and you love them and you want the best for them and you want to keep being entertained by them, then I'm not afraid to say it. You should be happy that they're getting the time off so they can come back and be their best. I'm sorry, but if you look at all these old people, that older people who are wrestling into their 40s and 50s, and you see how broken their body is, they can't move the way that you know you want them to. But if you look at someone like AJ Styles, who has taken exceptionally good care of his body, and he's in his 40s now. I remember, as Bill Barron also booked AJ Styles.
Right, he's his man. Agent, right?
Right, yeah. And so he did all of his TNA stuff, all of his New Japan stuff, all of his Ring of Honor stuff before he got to the WWE. And so he, AJ was telling Bill, and Bill relayed this to us, that when he was coming in, he was feuding with John Cena, and they were having that big rivalry. John Cena was like, all right, I got someone who I can pass the torch to now. And AJ said, buddy, I'm the same age as you.
Yeah.
Right.
But you couldn't tell, right?
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't be able to tell off the bat.
AJ, I love that feud when he came in because you know this about AJ. He can put over anybody that gets in the ring with him. And they want to talk about, you know, John Cena's, you know, 5 moves of doom or whatever that they call it. I know he has, you know, at least 10 moves that he does. But AJ really, I think he helped broaden kind of the scope of matches that John Cena had. The first ever Canadian Destroyer that I saw John Cena, you know, be a part of was with AJ Styles. I was like, I didn't know he had it in him.
Exactly.
You know, John Cena's a great talent, but I didn't know he had that in him.
Exactly.
Well, and might I add, AJ Styles, in my opinion, may have one of the best Royal Rumble surprise entrants of all time.
Of course. And we're right around that season, so I've seen a lot of stuff pop up. And I just 2 days ago, I saw AJ Styles' entrance pop back up on my YouTube feed. And, man, it was great to watch. Just seeing that pop up on the screen, I am phenomenal. And then they just lose it.
Oh, dude, it was such a loud pop. Such a loud pop. Yeah. On that note, since we're talking about it, let's do a top three. Who is the top three you would like to see as surprise entrants this year's Royal Rumble?
You can leave us out of it.
We passed on the opportunity, yeah, just so you know.
A trip called. I was like, you know, I got
they weren't, the podcast.
They weren't paying enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You get it.
Expensive bill.
That's you get it.
And that's not a work.
Let's see. The top three surprise entrants.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
Dude, the thing is, there's so much. They've built it up so that there's so many opportunities for a surprise entrance. You know what I mean? I think it would be great to see kind of like, okay, to do like a Japanese star.
Agreed. I'm 100% with you on that.
I feel like it'd be really cool to see someone. They don't have to sign them.
Like an Okada?
Okada or Ibushi.
Ibushi. One of those guys.
Ibushi, when he did the 205 Live tournament, I thought for sure, man, they need to give him a job out of this. The match he had with Cedric Alexander, I was crazy about that match. I've watched that match probably 100 times. I was watching it over and over, and I learned something new every single time I watched that match. Already being a professional wrestler, it was that good. So Kota Ibushi, one of the best Japanese stars of all time, in my opinion.
I'll second that.
I think it would be great to see him there.
So we'll say Japanese star is number one.
So if we're going to broaden the categories here, let's go with a throwback. Who would be a good throwback that wouldn't necessarily be someone who's totally immobile that you could probably like get in here?
Glass shattering sound cue here.
I think they have something bigger with that. What do you think about a Kevin Nash? I mean, he can still move, and I think he's had some stuff going on with the passing of his son where he kind of needs something to pep him up a little bit.
He does. I mean, probably. I think it would be great to see this, but yeah. I think the problem with the nostalgia right now is we just had Raw 30.
Exactly.
And so a lot of that nostalgia got filled, and you know, so that's why I'm not going to go all, you know, old childhood favorites right now.
Right.
I'm thinking maybe we can get one slot because just right now in the atmosphere, there's been a lot of nostalgia that's just come back. I would love to see Kevin Nash. You know what? Let's put him in there.
I'd love to see George South.
Oh my God. Do you think, die?
Okay. I didn't even consider that a possibility.
So big.
If they got George South in there, holy smoke. You guys have a show coming up with him, right?
So we don't have him booked yet. We're working on it.
George.
Yeah. So we did see him this past Saturday though at the AML show. Mm-hmm. They did a big cage match, Act of War Games 2.
It's phenomenal.
And spoiler alert, George won that match for his team. But you know, you talk about the guys who have been doing this forever, and you know they've lost a step. Jerry Lawler was one of those people. We saw him against the Beer City Bruiser, and he took kind of an awkward bump, and you could tell that it just wasn't. He doesn't have it anymore.
Right.
George isn't one of those guys.
George is timeless.
George can go, man, and it's just crazy because he's so, when I say old school, I mean old school. He is the only one left of his breed. Mm-hmm. He is the only one left that wrestles the way that he does, and that's for the fans and that's for the boys in the back. If you ever get a chance to talk to George South, meet George South, take that opportunity. I've been in this business, and I knew George South from the fourth month I've been in. I was in a battle royal. He was on the show. I got to meet him. He was talking. He led the prayer, you know, in the back for all the boys before the show started, and just sitting as a fly on the wall, listening to him talk to other talent. You learn so much. This guy never, ever spoke to me. He never knew my name. He never bothered to learn my name. Why should he? You know, he's a great guy. He's, you know, top of the list. He's old and he has, you know, a lot of names in his brain. But it was after our match. And this, I love my match with FTR. But what made me the most happiest about that match was we're in the locker room. And George South comes in to the locker room where me and Griff are. And for the first time ever, rather than just giving me a little, hey, buddy, good to see you. Bye. He shakes my hand and he says, that was a damn good match, son. And instantly I was just like, my heart. I had just wrestled 6-star FTR to a draw, right? Restarted the match, wrestled for the Ring of Honor Championships against FTR with my best friend in the world, Griff Garrison.
With us in the front row.
With these guys in the front row going crazy. And I didn't think it could get any better for me at that moment until I'm back in the locker room. I'm trying to come down from everything that's just happened. And George South walks in and says, that's a damn good match, son. Mm-hmm. And from that moment on, you know, we've had a good connection. We've been able to talk. And, you know, I love George South. I've always loved him just as my very first live show that I actually ever went to was the first AML show at Johnny and June's, and he was a master. And I was like, man, this guy's crazy. This crotchety old grandpa, you know, rallying everybody up. It's great. From the time I actually got to see him in the locker room, talking to other talent, from this moment where he actually, you know, complimented me and we actually had a conversation for the first time because of the FTR match. I was never trained by him. I never had a reason for him to really talk to me or give me advice until that moment. And he went out of his way to do that. And I was very grateful. And I love you, George South. Come on the show. It's going to be great. These guys are blowing up.
Give us your final of the three that you would like to see enter the Royal Rumble. And then I have a question for you.
Marcus Cross. Can I say that?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would love to be in a Rumble. Put me in a Rumble.
I'll second it.
Or Jim Mulkey.
Yeah. Do you have any real life heat with anybody?
In any promotion?
Oh, yeah. Man. No, you're going to ask
including, me this including any of the independent scene.
Oh, you're going to ask me this question.
Or if you have a good story that was, it's been squashed since then, you're cool with them.
I'll tell you the time that I was most scared about having heat with someone. It was at Griff and I's first ever Ring of Honor taping. No, it wasn't a tape. Well, it was going to be the first time that I was on Ring of Honor television.
Okay.
We had a Future of Honor match in Concord before, and then we went to the center stage taping in Atlanta, and Jay Lethal was the world champion at the time. You know, when you're a young talent, you go in and you be respectful. If somebody doesn't know you, you introduce yourself, you shake everyone's hands. You know, you do things like get a case of water for the locker room and bring it in. You try to be respectful. Mm-hmm. You try to go out of your way to be nice to other people. You don't brown nose, you don't kiss no butt.
You just go above and beyond.
Exactly. You try to show that, you know, you're respectful and that you want to be here and that you're making an effort to connect with other people in the locker room that want to be connected with. So I'm going around and everybody in the whole place hands, except the one person I couldn't find was Colt Cabana. Okay, I couldn't find him, so I didn't shake his hand. I didn't say hello. But I saw Jay Lethal kind of sitting up in the stands. You know, world champion is like, okay, I gotta say hello to the world champ.
Absolutely.
But he's on the phone and he's busy. He's in his suit. He's walking back and forth. He's talking with producers. I never really got a chance to say hey to him, right? And so the thing is, at Ring of Honor, they give you your paychecks before the before the lights go on. Mm. So they actually have someone come out and they give you your paychecks for the night, so that nobody has to worry about, because you know at the end of the night, you know you've already wrestled, you're
ready to get out of there.
You're ready to get out of there. People are changing, producers are running all over the place trying to make sure the show's going on correctly. So they handle all like the payment, the paperwork, all that stuff gets handled before the show even starts. So I already got my paycheck. Oh, thank you so much. My first television paycheck. So I put it in my back pocket. You know, and we're talking, we're hanging out at the ring. I was going to wrestle another talent, Xander. Oh, I feel so bad right now. I can't remember his last name, but the match went good. And Jeff Cobb was going to come in after the match and he was going to, you know, crush us, you know, during that match. He was going to squash that match to lead to something else. So we're calling the match. Talking about I'm gonna beat you up, he's gonna beat me up, I'm doing promos. They take us into the locker room and I'm talking like with all these producers, like I'm gonna beat this guy up, and I have a great promo and they actually put it on TV, which is great. You know, you first time you get to be on television, they let you cut a promo and talk, gotta get your character over.
Heck yeah.
But we go backstage into the locker room and I can't find my paycheck. I just had it in my back pocket. I wasn't doing much. Someone gave it to me. I was out ringside for like 5-10 minutes. Where the heck did my paycheck go? I lost my first television paycheck on the first day at Ring of Honor. And so I'm stressing out. I'm getting changed for my match. I'm sitting right next to Griff. Griff is there, but he's actually hurt at the time. Mm-hmm. So he had a broken foot. Mm. So, which is crazy, because anytime we get an opportunity in these big companies, man, is always something.
Inevitable.
One of us is hurt at the mm-hmm. at the same time. So like, you know, at the beginning of Ring of Honor, we had one match, then he broke his foot. So then I had to carry the torch for a little bit. He came back and we ended up having great tag team matches. Then you know, I get injured. I tear my knee, my ACL. I need two reconstructive surgeries in 2020. And he start killing it with Brian Pillman Jr. at AEW, Varsity Blondes. And then now I'm there and, you know, I'm feeling good. I'm getting dark matches. You know, Griff's hurt right now. Mm-hmm. Poor boy tore his shoulder, but you know, he's a workhorse. They said he'll be back in 6 months, but I give it, you know, maybe 4 or 5 months till you guys see Griff again. Just because when he broke his foot, they told him 8 months till he returns. My boy came back in 5.5 months because that's who he is, because he works hard and that's my boy. And I'm proud to be his tag team partner, and I want to be his tag team partner on AEW as well.
All right. So, beside the point. And he hurt himself in the gym, right?
He had injured it in a match, okay. But like he had tweaked it. I think he took a hard hit. I don't think he landed the right way. His shoulder was kind of bothering him. And then the next time he went working out in the gym, my boy's throwing 1,000 pounds over his head and just totally like tore his shoulder.
So funny story. I was at the wife's family Thanksgiving dinner this year. And her cousin, a big, huge in the fitness, works out all the time. She was talking at the table and she was like, and the wife had mentioned something about my pro wrestling podcast or something like that. And she's like, did you know that there's a guy that goes to the gym with me down here? He's like a pro wrestler or something. And I was like, go on. And she was like, yeah, he's on TV and stuff. A tall guy with like really long hair. I was like, Griff? She's like, how the hell do you know? I was like, been on the podcast.
Yeah, I had him already. Been there, done that.
Yeah. So I snap a picture of him. I was like, hey, you know this girl? He's like, oh, yeah, I know her.
I go to the gym. Yeah, Griff knows everybody, man. Yeah. But so we're – so I'm backstage at Ring of Honor, right? And then the world champion – Jay Lethal and Colt Cabana, they walk in and we have a designated locker room for, you know, they try to rib you. They call it the jobber locker room. They have it like listed on the door, jobber locker room, ha ha ha. But man, I would have won that match if Jeff Cobb didn't. I wouldn't be no jobber. I would have won that match if Jeff Cobb didn't, you know, break it up. But so they walk in, who is Marcus Cross? And they're reading this paycheck out, and I'm like, oh boy,
they found it.
That's me. Well, so, and then Colt Cabana says, you know what, I don't think I know who you are. And Jay Lethal says, I don't think I know who you are either, because you didn't say hey to us.
Damn.
And I'm like, no, damn, I tried my best. And I just kind of like
seized up almost.
See, I gulped like, oh no. And then so they give me, you know, my paycheck, and they're like, next time say hey to the vets. And they give me my paycheck and I'm like, oh no. But so all night I'm stressing out. I'm like, oh man, these guys are, you know, I have heat with these guys. You know, I'm going to, like, these are the guys at the top of the locker room. I'm not going to get invited back. They're going to, you know, they're going to tell the producers and stuff, you know, we don't like that Marcus kid, whatever, no matter how good he does, well, whatever. But at the end of the night, I didn't know this. And the thing is, Bill Behrens was there. He was backstage, and he didn't tell us the whole night that he was actually really good friends with Jay Lethal. And because Jay Lethal knew that me and Griff were Bill's boys, that's why he, you know, he started to mess with us a little bit. So it was just a big prank. And I don't know how they got my paycheck. So someone definitely pickpocketed
it. Yeah.
For sure. Someone had to have. I don't know how they did that. But
well, and I'll tell you, this guy right here, huge Jay Lethal fan. Yeah. What was that match that you were like, oh my God, I can't stop watching it. Made me watch it again. And we've watched it. Like,
it was Jay Lethal and Sammy Guevara.
Oh my God. What a great match. That was absolutely... Whew, that's great stuff.
Dude, Jay Lethal's a great guy. Jay Lethal, I don't know if you guys were, you probably weren't at that PWF show where Jay Lethal and Griff wrestled.
No, we didn't make it to that one.
They tore the house down, brother. And Jay Lethal did a seminar before that show. It was great. If anyway,
that was in December, right? Or November. It was pretty recent, right?
It was November, yeah. I believe. And so anytime, you know, you get a chance to go learn from someone like Jay Lethal and take a seminar, young aspiring wrestlers, I challenge you to take every single seminar from anyone like Sanjay Dutt, Jay Lethal, whoever you can. Just if you wanted to learn anything in this wrestling business, you learn from people like that. People have been doing it for a long time, but I digress. Yeah, no, they had a banger match. They had the whole high school was up on their feet for these guys, and they were just, you know, killing it the whole nine yards.
That's a good segue to the next thing here. I'm on patrioticwrestling.com. Shows that Friday, March 3rd, in the town of Matthews, North Carolina, at the Recreation Department, we get to see you in action. It's Brad Lodi Kane, it looks like.
I think I'm wrestling Myrick Moore.
Myrick Moore, and then Suicide, Stuart, and my boy Stuart Snodgrass. I love him. He will be there.
Yes, we love both the other guys.
Both of the other guys.
I believe at that show, my trainer, LeBron Cozone, he's the guy who runs Firestar Pro Wrestling. He's actually going to be on that show. He's wrestling Caleb Conley. I've wrestled Caleb Conley at PWF before, and it was a really good match.
So I'm glad you mentioned LeBron, because that's kind of where I was going next. Mm-hmm. So I see that, you know, you guys are Firestar Pro Wrestling graduates, the first ones, correct?
The OMG, James Ryan, who wrestles for AML a little bit, and... Cam Carter were the first two graduates. When Griff and I came in, we were the third and fourth graduates.
Okay. So when y'all had this conversation of we don't know what we're doing with life, let's go for our dream, did you immediately go to Firestar, or was it kind of like we got to figure this out, or how did it transition to then making it into Firestar?
We just Googled, like, if pro wrestling schools near us, you know, and the very first one that popped up was Firestar Pro Wrestling, which, you know, looking back on it, they hadn't really made a name for themselves. LeBron had just created the website like 2 or 3 months before that, like in April, and we emailed him in like June. And so he didn't have that many people in his class. He had maybe 7 or 8 people that he was training total at the time. He only had one graduate. And, but when you have places like High Spots and CWF, it's like, how is he on the top of the list? But we picked the very first one that popped up on the Google search. We emailed him. He said, "All right, you gotta bring a deposit. It was like $50." And I was like, "Okay, so that's what we're gonna do."
Deal.
It's a little bit more expensive now since he's actually taken off, and you know, a lot of people that graduate his program get opportunities to go places like AEW Dark. He's had people, graduates that work for CYN, CZW, Ohio Valley Wrestling. So if you are a graduate of Firestar Pro Wrestling, it's great for getting a base, and I'm not going to say guaranteed, almost 100% guaranteed to get looked at and get opportunities at all these other places. I don't know anyone that's graduated from that program that really puts their mind to it that hasn't gotten a serious opportunity with some bigger, at least independent promotions.
Well, and shout out to LeBron he built it from the ground up. You were in the first Firestar building, correct?
We had only had that building for a month before we showed up. Before that, he was taking his ring. All he had was a ring.
Right.
And he had to break it down and put it back up. And he was moving it from backyard to backyard to backyard. Who would ever let him put up a ring for a weekend, for a night, for a day or two? So he was just breaking down the ring, putting it on this rink-a-dink crappy trailer and just hauling it around. I mean, he can tell you more about his origin story and all that stuff. You'll get to hear all that from him. But he only had this little rink-a-dink building that he had for about a month. And it was just like a little trailer park, like garage, like a storage unit building almost. Just like box fans everywhere. There's leaky water pipes, you know, all over the building. And this ring that's been, you know, out in the elements, the mat is super duper hard. It's like, if you could bump in that ring, you could bump in any ring. I wasn't scared to bump in any ring. Every ring felt like a cloud after I bumped in that ring. Once it's been out in the elements, broken down, put back up so many different times. But so, and then after he was in that unit for a few months, then he moved to a unit across the hallway. And then eventually the building that we were in got different owners. They had to kick him out, and now he's in a new facility. Have you been to the new Firestar Arena yet?
But I've seen the pictures. It is gorgeous.
It's great. It really is. I'm so proud of LeBron. He's my mentor. He trained me in wrestling. He was a big inspiration for me, you know, spiritually. When I was 19 years old, when I decided to get baptized, and he was there supporting me the whole time, you know, in my spiritual journey as well. He's a great trainer, locker room leader, great wrestler, great talent. He's been killing it on DPW. He's been on AEW Dark himself. He got invited to go be an extra for a WWE show, but he couldn't get his paperwork done in time or something like that, I believe. But you know, he's a great talent, great locker room leader, great guy, just all around in general. I don't know where if it wasn't for LeBron, if it wasn't for Bill Barons, I wouldn't be in the wrestling business right now. It's kicked my butt 7 ways from Sunday, and I don't know if I'd still be in this business, especially considering the injuries that I've had. Also, Griff. But Griff's pretty much me. Me and Griff are the same. We're like, you know, two sides of the same coin.
Yin and yang.
Pretty much. So if it wasn't for Griff, Bill, and LeBron, I would not have gotten into wrestling or still been in wrestling. So those are my big three.
Absolutely.
But yeah, LeBron. And now if you get a chance to go to his new Firestar Arena, it's absolutely tremendous. There's going to be a Ring of Sport show that he's putting on the day after the South Carolina, or it's actually North Carolina, the PWF show. It's going to be March the 4th. It's a Sunday. And Ring of Sport is this cool idea where he's taking it back to almost old. The whole show is a gimmick of 70s British style wrestling,
okay,
where you have somewhere between 8 to 12 rounds, 3 minutes per round, and every match is 2 out of 3 falls.
Oh, wow.
So you can get a tap, a submission, a pinfall, or if it's a knockout. So there's no closed fist. Closed fist will automatically disqualify you. Elbow strikes are allowed. palm strikes are allowed. No kicks with the top of the foot or the toe, I believe, are allowed. I need to, I'm wrestling there next month. I just actually accepted that booking today. So I'm excited for that, but I think it's a very interesting take on wrestling in general, kind of bringing back an old school style of it where, you know, you wrestle 3 minutes, you try to get your pinfall or submission in that minute. If you don't, then you got a break, and then you come back again for round two, round three, round four. And once you get to that 2 out of 3 falls, then, you know, the match is over.
That's almost some of the stuff that I saw in the early 90s at some of the fairgrounds when they would have wrestling at the fairgrounds just so they could get a 15-minute show on for the crowd and have, you know, they had 5 guys that were wrestling or something like that, and maybe some of the women, they would come out and do, you know, you have a 3-minute time limit. That's done. You move on to the next match.
Yep. So, I mean, I'm very excited. I've never participated in a match of this style, so I don't even know who my opponent is yet, but I'm very excited. That one's going to be March 4th at the Firestar Arena, I believe.
Okay.
And so on what you just kind of said, I do want to elaborate. You've never done this style. Now, I know you've done some, like, gimmick matches, and what's, like, your favorite quote-unquote gimmick match to be a part of, you know, opposed to just like a singles one-on-one match or, you know, a master machine tag match? Like
bag of dog poop on a pole match.
Are you like a hard, do you enjoy the hardcore matches, TLC type style? Or
I have had probably my best matches have been no disqualification or hardcore matches against Griff when we had a big feud against each other in Firestar Pro Wrestling when we were very first starting out. It's kind of what put our names on the map in the local independent scene. It's what got us noticed by people like Bill Barons, was the fact that we were just willing to go out there and kick the crap out of each other. And we had some pretty intense matches.
A lot of blood.
A lot of blood, guts, tears. One time we were wrestling at a Texas discotheque. It's like a bar club space. New Jack was on the show. Rest in peace, New Jack. I used a fire extinguisher on Griff, and he was like, you know, I'm going to choke this guy. I sprayed the fire extinguisher on Griff. The whole place goes up, you know, in this smoke. But at the end of the match, I come back, and New Jack grabs me by my collar, and he's like, hey, my daughter was in the front row, and she choked on that. And so I got New Jack cussing me out right in my face after I've just gotten the crap beat out of me in this hardcore match. And he's like, I'm going to take you back out there, and you're going to have another match, and I'm going to get this trash can. I'm like, oh, my gosh, no. And he's like, I'm just kidding.
Okay, I was like, did you have the other match?
No. You know, you see a lot of stuff about New Jack on TV that talks about how sadistic and insane he was, but we talked to the Catman, Dalton Dallas, and he was talking about just what a great guy that New Jack was. Totally, completely different on, you know, from what you see on TV as to who the real person
is. It's crazy how many people I know that actually had such a good relationship with New Jack. He actually spent a few months of his life on the couch at Bill Barron's house.
Oh, wow.
There's a few interviews out there where he mentions Bill in his book and stuff, but like Bill actually helped him a lot when he was recovering from he would fall back into addictions and things like that, but there was lots of times where he was really trying to better himself, and Bill, right. Bill actually helped him a lot in being able to, you know, overcome a lot of those things for a period of time. He was actually really close with LeBron. New Jack would actually come to the Firestar Training Center and train people. You wouldn't know it, but New Jack can throw a hip toss, man. And he would teach all these youngins how to throw a hip toss. And you're like, dang, you know, you learn. So, you know, you wouldn't expect to learn from him. But he was honestly a great guy to have around in the locker room. He was a great influence, honestly, for people who feel like all they have is wrestling.
You know,
you get a lot of people turn to wrestling because they feel like they don't have any. I'm fortunate. Griff is fortunate. We're doing this because it's our dream. We are doing this. I mean, definitely we feel like, you know, this is all we want to do. This is like all we have. But there are some people who feel lost in life, and wrestling is a good way for them to find themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's like an outlet almost.
Exactly. To be who you want to be, but to find out who you are. Wrestling is so great for that. And New Jack could pick those people out.
Yeah.
Those people who needed wrestling. And he was the best to them. He was the best of just helping people figure out who they were, why they're here, and why they need to stay here, why they need to be here, or even if they didn't need to be here. He was just great to have in the locker room, great presence. Every experience I've had outside of, you know, choking his daughter with a fire extinguisher in the front row, horrible. But out of that, every other experience I've had with him was great.
So the reason I asked you if you had any heat with anybody in the locker room in real life is this is kind of a two-part question. So there's that, and then do you know John Schuyler?
Yeah, I know John Schuyler.
Because my boy Roadhouse here is he's got some heat.
Ooh.
Hates me. He hates me. So from the PWF show, and I was it the Hardy PWF show or the FTR PWF show?
I think it was the FTR
I think you're PWF right. show. So, you know, we were in the front seat or front row. John Schuyler was also on the card. I have no clue who he was wrestling. Actually, I think it was Chase Emery, right?
It was either Chase Emery or...
Chase Emery.
It was either him or Mike Maughan. I can't remember.
I think it was Chase. I think the second one was Mike Maughan. Anyways, so, you know, he's... First of all, and this is probably the only nice thing you'll ever hear me say about John Schuyler, he plays the heel really well, which I don't know whether he just plays the heel really well or if he really is that much of an asshole. Anyways, so we're in the front row. He slides... Bell rings, he slides out of the ring, he's doing his heel thing, going across the front row, talking shit to everybody. He gets all the way around, and then there's us, and so I stand up, start talking junk to him, and he, you know, he gets super worked up, this, that, and the other. And for those of you that don't know, first of all, John Schuyler's built like a brick shit house, but...
Dude's a little thickum.
But... He's not that tall. In fact, I'm not that tall, and he's shorter than me. So he starts going back and forth with me, and I get to the point where I'm like, okay, I have nothing else to say. So I can just – he's probably about this much shorter than I am. So I make the funny joke to just go and just look right over him. And, yeah, so he didn't really like that. So then, funny story, we see him at AML's WrestleCade in – what was it, December?
November. It was last Black Friday weekend in November.
So we're going through the convention, and I was like, he's in the back. He's like one of the last wrestlers we get to see. And I'm like, oh, you know, what's up, John Schuyler? How are you? And apparently he definitely remembered
me. He remembered?
Well,
wow.
I've also had a couple of Twitter exchanges with him.
Okay. So he knows who you are.
He remembered me, and we had a little back and forth. I did a little shoot promo on one of our previous episodes. I'd love to have him on and talk major shit to him. But I do want to know, is that really him?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want to dive too deep into this topic, but heat with John Schuyler is something that you and Griff would share. Has he talked to you about that at all?
He hasn't, but I know who I'm texting after this episode now.
You need to. I don't think it's much of a place for me to discuss. I don't know if they, I don't believe they still have heat from what I understand. And it was never like outwardly spoken heat, but there was definitely
tension.
I was just trying to text Griff Garrison right now. Hey, can I talk about this? But you got no service down here. I got like the little no bar signal, but I was getting ready to text him and be like, hey, can I talk about this real quick? But I couldn't get a message. So it's not going to be necessarily my place to talk about.
That's fair.
But if you ever get a chance to talk to Griff Garrison about that, I would definitely bring it up because there's a little bit of past in history that him and John Schuyler share that I've just been, you know, preview to. I've never really talked to him that much personally. I just know the situation that Griff and him were in, and I think it would be interesting for you to kind of get that information.
Well, we're going to have to get Griff back on anyway, just because, you know, you are on video. Our podcast with Griff was not on video, so you technically have one up on him now, and I know the competitive nature of Griff. He's going to have to get back in here and, you know, show off his, you know, his long, beautiful hair on video. And,
exactly.
Well, and I do just want to throw out there, Griff, currently right now, you are our most listened to podcast, followed very, very closely by Dalton Catman Dallas. But now that we got the video, I think that Mr. Cross might take you over.
This one's going everywhere. Everyone like and share and send it everywhere because this is a good podcast.
Make this one the most listened to because we both, well, let me rephrase that. We all three know how competitive Griff is. And then that way we can get the John Schuyler story, maybe even get a John Schuyler call-in, maybe? We'll see.
That'd be fun. And guys, If you haven't already, go watch some Master and Machine matches on YouTube.
Absolutely.
Find that Ring of Honor stuff. Find the Patriotic Wrestling Federation stuff. It, just look up Marcus Cross. Look up Griff Garrison's old stuff before he was in AEW. It's good stuff. And I promise, you want to see Master and Machine together in All Elite Wrestling or on any independent show that you can make your way to. So share this so everyone else can see the glory that is the future of tag team wrestling.
Absolutely.
Said so by FTR, the Hardys, and the Rock and Roll Express.
And the Swanton Pod.
Yeah. So before we move into the next topic, I want to just ask you, who's the real Marcus Cross?
The real Marcus Cross is about 99% of what you already see.
Okay.
Marcus Cross is a fourth degree black belt in Taekwondo. Marcus Cross loves to travel. Marcus Cross just loves to be with his friends. Marcus Cross loves to... I spent a lot of time when I was teaching martial arts working with kids. Mm-hmm. So if you ever see me at a wrestling show, I mean, I shake hands with everyone. I talk to everyone. But if there's like a 7-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old that comes up to me and they want to take their picture, they want to talk to me, I'm going to spend more time with them.
Absolutely.
For some reason, I'm doing wrestling in large part because it's making my younger self happy.
Yeah.
I know that my inner 9-year-old, 8-year-old is looking at what I'm doing now with a huge smile on his face. I've already made that inner 9-year-old proud. So if I can inspire or at least motivate other kids to do what they want to do, you know, that's what I'm going to do. If they want to talk to me, I'm going to talk to them. So I love kids. I love adults too, but you're probably not going to get, you know, you're not going to get attached to the hair. You're not going to buy parents don't buy gimmick pictures. Kids buy gimmick pictures. Kids buy a t-shirt. Kids spend parents' money too. Yeah. So it's also a good business strategy. But, you know, I've always worked with kids from the time I was 16 years old. I worked in martial arts. I was working with kids who were 3 years old all the way up through high school and college age. And, you know, we were working on, you know, not just kicking and punching things, but we're working on things like focus, self-defense, discipline.
Confidence,
okay. Everything. It's the important stuff, you know?
Fun fact, I don't know if you know, I'm also a black belt.
Oh, for real? I mean, I knew about the gymnast stuff. I didn't know about the martial arts.
And Sanshin Kai style karate.
Interesting.
I
don't know much about that style.
I own a black belt and I use it with my dress clothes. And I've watched Redneck Ninja enough times that I know how to do like a Judy Chow.
That's fair.
So you know a little bit of that redneck kung fu?
A little bit.
Yeah. I have a question and I don't want to break kayfabe, but... really, if you search anywhere. So we know that a lot of wrestlers, they don't go by their actual name. Is Marcus Cross your actual name?
Marcus Cross is who you're talking to.
Got it. You don't have to tell us your real name.
Marcus Cross is...
Or is it just who you've taken over all the way?
It's not the name on my birth certificate.
Say that. That's all I want. We won't push the certificate more.
But I am Marcus Cross. And 99% of the time, if you guys see me at a show, definitely at a show. If you see me in the airport, if you see me at a train station, bus station, even though I don't ride those that much, or if you see me on the side of the road, you're going to meet and talk to Marcus Cross. Who you see on the ring, who you see in those promos, who you see on TV and social media, that's who you're talking to right now. It's not going to be any different. You want to come take a picture, you want to shake hands, you want to talk for 5 minutes, that's what we're going to do. But don't expect anything different. Don't try to get no dirt. Don't expect anything more, anything less. What you see is what you get. This is Marcus Cross.
Absolutely. So I'm assuming there's a very close-knit crew, such as just immediate family, that is really the only ones that calls you by your real name. So like when you go to like those family's events, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, stuff like that, is it kind of like they'll call whatever your real name is and you're like, oh yeah, that's me.
Yeah, that happens too. And sometimes I'm already in the mode of, you know, I'm around my family, which I'll say it like, you're kind of like letting the guard down a little bit.
Right.
But someone will be like, Marcus, and I don't respond because it's like, oh, I'm not used to my family calling me that. They always call me, you know, my birth name. But
right.
So, I mean, pretty much Marcus Cross isn't an alter ego. Marcus Cross is still who I am and who I've always been since, you know, the day I was born, since the day I started martial arts, since the days I've wrestled in high school, since the day I started pro wrestling training. Marcus Cross is the same guy, but very few people just, you know, call me another name. That's it.
That's cool. That's cool. So I do have a question, and I kind of want to get your side on this because we are, and I want you to know, I hate to keep bringing up other people that you worked with or Griff, because this is your time, but there is one thing that I do have to ask about. Tell us about the era of the panty droppers.
Well, since you've asked me that, I'm sure Griff's already told you a little bit, right?
A little bit, but I want to see your perspective of it.
So panty droppers was, Griff, okay, the very first out-of-state booking that Griff and I ever had, we were going to McLaurin, Mississippi, and LeBron had actually gotten booked on a show, and he said, you know, he said to the promoter that he got booked by, you know, I got some guys who I'm training who are pretty decent. Can, you know, I'm going to bring them in the car with me. And they said, great. And we ended up getting put into a fatal four-way corner tag team match. So four teams in this tag team match. And, we spent the whole way down trying to figure out, you know, what we're going to do. Like, what song are we going to come out to? Like, you know, we're trying to like download stuff, and you know, we get to the hotel and we like try to connect to the Wi-Fi. It's not working too good, so we got to use a hotspot on our phone. If we're staying in this like little rinky-dink, crappy, you know, Motel 6 or whatever. We're trying to download this music and figure out what we're gonna do. And I think we were on like a real Justin Timberlake type groove, and it was that
like boy band almost.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I know it was Justin Timberlake. I can't remember what Carry Out. It was the song Carry Out. And so we were like, oh, we love this song. You know, we're young. We don't have any facial hair. We're like teenage studs. You know,
you're
what I
jamming
mean?
Jamming out.
Pretty much. We're 18 years old at the time. And so, what was it? Griff, I believe, had a pair of panties in his suitcase that his girlfriend at the time had like left in there or something.
Nice.
And so we come out to Carry Out by Justin Timberlake, and he's spinning them around his finger, and we're just like, yeah, we're the panty droppers. And it got over for what it was. We've had a few appearances as the panty droppers since then, where I wear like a Chippendales, just like bow tie and nothing else. You know what I mean?
Bro, the next throwback show.
It's a vibe.
Yeah, you have to be the panty droppers.
We really started to lean into it. We'd spend 7 minutes just on our entrance just dancing on everybody. They'd have to restart the song because we were taking so long. We just had so much fun going out and dancing and people like and clapping and making it rain on us.
And Griff had even said you guys had, I guess, went to the, I hope not Goodwill, but Walmart or something like that and bought like a pack of panties and were throwing it out into the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Like
I mean, yeah. You gotta live it up. You know what I mean? Yeah. We've done a lot. But yeah, it definitely started from that original pair that he had. And even when we very first started with Bill Behrens, we had gotten all of our professional in-ring training by LeBron, but Bill was trying to develop more of our characters and our gimmicks and stuff. So he had us cutting promos every single week and sending it to him, cutting promos on our personal life, cutting promos on people we want to wrestle. And so one day we cut a promo on the New Day, and we were, you know, telling him, and we were the panty droppers, and so we did a promo on that. And that's what really, I think, made Bill fall in love with us, just our energy. He was like, you're not going to be the panty droppers, but I like that promo. And we're like pole dancing on the Christmas tree and nice. All this stuff.
He's like, keep that same energy.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you ever have panties thrown back at you?
Oh, dude. I think we were probably a little too young for anyone to feel comfortable doing that, or at least we looked young. At least when I got into wrestling, like when I graduated high school, I was only 120 pounds. I was like a small guy. And I mean, I remember one time I wrestled James Drake, and he was chopping the crap out of me, and everyone yelling, "That's child abuse!" And he goes, "That's right." And he hits me again. But so, I mean, I'm trying to grow out of that now, but definitely, I mean, I'm trying to put on weight. I'm sitting at around 175, 180 right now.
Yeah, you look great. You've been working out. We can definitely tell the work you've been putting in
for
sure.
That was one comment that I think we had talked about when you appeared on SmackDown from the last time we saw you live. It's like, man, Marcus has put on some weight. It looks good on him.
Muscle-wise, too. It's not just like dead weight. I mean, you look jacked, bro.
Thanks, bro. I'm definitely trying. I mean, you can't tell now because of the baggy sweater, but I'm definitely trying to. And you know, so with when you're lifting weights, a lot of it comes, you know, with mass that you're getting everywhere. So I'm not as ripped right down here as I'd like to be, but you know, you go through cycles.
Us either.
So
I'm exactly where I want to be.
Bro, that dad bod's killing it.
I'm telling you, man. Gas tank on a whoop ass machine is what that is.
So I've been lifting weights and I've gained a lot of pounds. Like last year I put on like just 20, 25 pounds just, you know, in 2022. So I'm starting soon here. I'm probably going to go be going on a cutting cycle, mm-hmm. or I'm just trying to like lean and tone up again. Because I mean, if you look at all these wrestlers, it's like lean is the new jacked. Yeah. At least when you're looking at places like AEW and WWE, still the land of the giants. They still want you to be 6'5",
but they're, now they're wanting 240 pounds. Now they're wanting the big guys to be cut too. You know, exactly. Which is totally opposite. You know, one of my favorites, Dusty Rhodes, man. Mm-hmm. He is the culmination of dad bod excellence.
Exactly.
And you know, I just I've been bulking for about the past 10 years, and I'm still not on his level. So I guess I'm gonna have to start cutting now to see what I can come up with. I don't know.
But besides, and back in the day, besides people like Rick Rude and stuff, or the Ultimate Warrior, besides those two guys, who had less than, you know, 12% body fat?
Right.
Like, yeah, for real.
Well, even Ric Flair, as he was wrestling his early career, he was sitting at about 305, and that's big on that man's frame. Yeah,
he's chunky. He's about, what, 6'3"? 6'2"?
So he was not super tall.
No,
for
He was 6'5" before the plane crash that compressed, I think, 4 of his vertebrae and took 2 inches off of him. So I think he was about 6'3" in his prime.
Yeah.
So as a shorter, smaller framed guy before I hit 30, and 30 sucks, was it hard to try to put on that weight? Was it like, did you almost have to rewire your brain and your stomach? Because I know a lot of times, at least for me, when I was like skinny, like I could eat any and everything I wanted. Right. Now I look at something and it's 5 pounds, but I know that like through high school and stuff, like I wanted to be like, you know, 230 ripped, but it just never happened because my body's metabolism just freaking killed it. Was it harder for you?
I'd say when I was, especially coming out of high school and wrestling in high school, I was only 120 pounds. My metabolism was in overdrive all the time. I could definitely eat whatever. I would never go to Taco Bell and spend less than $20.
Right.
And I could eat that all in one sitting. You know what I mean? And it never caught up to me, but I never was hitting the weights either, but it never caught up to me until I had my knee surgery and I'm sitting on my butt for 12 months and I'm just, I haven't changed anything about my diet really, but it takes out your knee. You can't do cardio. You can't run.
Nothing.
It was
really
a totally different world once I came back to wrestling. I've never been felt so out of shape just cardio wise, and I had put on like that in that year. I probably put on 30 to 40 pounds, and it wasn't muscle weight because I wasn't necessarily working out as much. And I looked at myself, and I'm getting ready to come back to wrestling, and I'm like, I don't look the way I want to look.
I bet that remote finger was strong as hell. Strong as hell.
But having Griff, you know, at my side, it helped a lot. That dude's ripped. That dude's jacked. He has 7% body fat. And, you know, if he wasn't a wrestler, he'd probably be a personal trainer or a model or training for Mr. Olympia or something like that.
Well, he looks twice the size now that he did when I saw him make his debut.
Dude, he's huge. But he's the one who got me on all those things like bulking cycles, leaning cycles, what you need to eat, the type of nutrition you put in your body. He's pretty much a scientist at this point when it comes to all that stuff. But having him at my side definitely helped with that. I mean, he was there from the time like I hurt my knee. There's this guy, Michael Judas, that we wrestle with down in Georgia, South Carolina. He's one of Griff's trainers. So he works for the NWA. But he said he had, because he had ACL surgeries before, he told me, when you get done with your surgery, that night I want you to do 10 bodyweight squats the day you get out of surgery. And I was like, no freaking way. But Griff was right there. He helped me get out of off the couch, and he was like holding me, and he was like, all right, do these squats. So I had Griff with me, you know, every step of the way. And by the time it was time for me to start getting back in shape, Griff was right there with me. And I'm going through these cycles, but I'm definitely trying to get up to probably around my goal. I would love to be between 190 to 200 pounds and pretty lean. If I could get around 10% body fat, I'd love that. And that's the goal. But, you know, I'm sitting at probably about 180 right now, probably a little bit more body fat than I'd like, but I'm working on it. Everything's a road. Rome, I saw this the other day. Rome wasn't built in a day, but they worked on it every day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I actually really like that. So I know that, Firestar, was really like the kickoff where you learned, where you trained, where you had your first couple of matches, first couple of banger matches with Griff and everything. So from there, because I do know a little bit about y'all's history, and that y'all were in Southern Fried Pro Wrestling, was that the immediate jump? Or
so We broke on. So actually, I'd say we're probably bigger in the Georgia independent scene than we are in the North Carolina independent scene, just because that's where Bill lived, and he wanted us to come travel to Georgia as much as we could. There was a point where we were – there was a year, probably I'd say 2018, if we didn't have a Ring of Honor booking, we were in Georgia almost every single weekend. There were shows that we could do – like some days it'd be Fridays and Saturdays. Some days – some weekends it's just Saturdays. But there was a point where we were probably on the road at least for like 8 months there, every single weekend driving down 85 and coming back up, you know, going down to Georgia, just because that Bill didn't want to travel that far, but he wanted to have – he saw something in us. Right. He wanted a hand in our development, and the best way to do that is to have us, you know, come down to those shows where he can see us, where he can give us critique, and where we can be at places that have people like the Michael Judas, like Todd Sexton, that get reviews from people like Larry Goodman. There's a lot of Southern talent down there in Georgia that have been wrestling for – 10, 15, 20 years. And a lot of them wrestled in Ring of Honor back in the day, TNA back in the day. And where NWA Wildside used to be, where they and they had the deal where they were sending people to WWE and WCW back in like the late 90s, early 2000s. So there's just a lot of history and a lot of talented people who still wrestle there every single weekend on the independence that we could learn from. And that's probably what skyrocketed us, you know, so quickly, was being around those locker rooms down in Georgia. People don't realize how good the state of Georgia is for, you know, professional wrestling. And a lot of people come from all states, like South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. People would all come from all these states just to wrestle one independent show at Southern Fried Championship Wrestling and Anarchy Championship Wrestling in Georgia. It was great. Anarchy had a show on Fight TV, so that got us some type of like
TV exposure.
TV exposure, yeah, because they had the production. You got to find your hard cams. You got to find your floor cams. You have to. The times are very strict. You have to, you know.
So was that like your first like having to do that? Down in Southern Fried?
I'd say so. Down in Southern Fried and Anarchy Championship Wrestling was probably where we got most prepared for TV, because they were still – those they were modeled after NWA Wildside, which Ohio Valley Wrestling actually took, you know, inspiration from the NWA Wildside back in the day. There's old videos of people like Fandango and Kenny Omega back in the day from NWA Wildside, and that's where, you know, they would, you know, cut
their
teeth.
It was almost like a factory.
Pretty much is what it was. It was the first one,
right?
Back in like the 90s for sure.
And what we've noticed, just kind of so our goal on here, obviously it's cool to get the big AEW, WWE, we've done this, that, and the other. Don't get us wrong, we definitely still want to book you and have you on, but our goal is to really promote the independent scene, because we've said this a million times, some of these guys on this independent scene, there's no reason why they shouldn't be on these bigger television show type things. And what I've just kind of noticed, and I think you'll agree, East Coast wrestling has just really evolved in the last 5-10 years mm-hmm. of where, I mean, not knocking anything on the West Coast, but I really honestly feel like the East Coast has shown up and shown out, at least in the last 5-10 years. What have you seen, and how do you feel about that statement, and what kind of changes and progressions into the right way of the East Coast wrestling scene have you kind of experienced yourself?
Even along the East Coast, though, you have different, it's not all uniform, you know, there's so many different styles of wrestling that you can find on the East Coast. Whereas like if you go to Firestar Pro Wrestling, you're going to get a lot of that good Southern style storytelling, you know, bare knuckle brawl type wrestling.
Right.
Whereas you'll also get a blend of like where you go more up Northeast, where a lot of it is very athletic. A lot of it is very stunty. A lot of it
like
is
like luchador almost.
Exactly. So I definitely think the East Coast has a great blend of everything from your old school fashion storytelling to definitely great gimmicks and gimmick matches. You can find great hardcore matches, steel cage matches. I mean, WrestleCade is the biggest wrestling convention
on the East Coast.
Exactly. And so, I mean, and people travel from all over the country and even other parts of the world to come to, you know, this
little Winston-Salem.
The Winston-Salem of all places, right? So I think it's just a testament to East Coast wrestling, like you said, the fact that, you know, WrestleCade is here and things like that. But I'd say you definitely have to change up your style, though, depending on where you're going. I've been in places where when I very first tried to go down to these Georgia independent wrestling promotions where I'm trying to wrestle like I would at Firestar. And at Firestar, we modeled a little bit more like the Northeast. We're very athletic. A lot of it is, you know, lucha. It's fast paced. But a lot of that crowd, they're just like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. But they want you to give them a reason to be invested. They want to see you get mad. They want to see you get angry. They want to see you cry. They want to see you, you know, show
like
pain.
An emotion thing.
Exactly. And so that's what's going to get them riled up more versus, you know, doing a Canadian Destroyer. Whereas I think the people in the Northeast who have grown up on things like ECW, you know, that's where they get their rocks off is, you know, seeing the hardcore, the cool stuff, seeing something that's so dangerous but so well executed. You know what I mean? That's, you know, that's the showmanship for them. So it's a difference in psychology. And as a wrestler, when you travel up and down the East Coast, you have to be able to change your style. And if you can't, then you're probably not ready to go to the next level yet. You have to be able to handle whatever market you're in.
Well, and I can definitely say just from seeing you live in PWF, plus getting to, we didn't get to see you because you were still hurt in Firestar, but it was almost like because you were, the show that we came to out in Firestar, it was in the older building and you were still, you were recovered, but you still had some time before you were ring ready. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not mistaken, you were one of the people in commentary and it was almost even like a different persona here than it was in PWF. So I can definitely attest to him being able to adapt and it's cool to see.
Well, that and one of the last shows that we went to was up in Lenoir, North Carolina for NAWA wrestling. And one of the biggest matches of the night that got the biggest pops was this guy named Big Donnie versus his last name's Anderson.
It's going to be Chris Thunder Anderson.
Chris Thunder Anderson. They did a bull rope match. It got a huge pop, and neither he and I were really invested that much into it, but the crowd was. And it turns out that Big Donnie is just he's a hometown boy that they've watched him wrestle for 20 some years, and there were a lot of people there were there just to see him wrestle.
So what was cool for me in that moment was being able to see, like, we're in little town Lenoir. Mm-hmm. Like it was maybe what 5,000 people in the whole city that I felt like all of them were actually at this show, but watching the crowd reaction to something that even though we weren't into it, they freaking ate it up. So, right. And that's kind of like what we want to portray is like, even though it's not your cup of tea, you don't have to shit on it. You know what I mean?
So definitely, if you know, as a wrestler, I appreciate that because you guys can not necessarily, you don't have to love it, but like you said, you can appreciate the different types of art that are coming from wrestling as it is. I'd say, you know, every crowd is going to react different depending on who they're there for or what they're accustomed to with their style of wrestling. Definitely something that helped me get over this barrier of understanding different crowds is watching Japanese wrestling. Because if you watch them, they don't get rowdy and raucous and rambunctious. It's almost like watching a golf match.
Right.
Until they totally tear it down at the end, it's just, wow.
Yeah.
It's great, you know? And so the first time me and Griff were going down into Georgia wrestling and we're beating the crap out of each other and we're hitting each other so hard and we're pulling off all of our best stunts and the crowd is just kind of like sitting there and we feel like we're not getting as much a reaction.
Felt like you almost didn't connect
with the crowd versus people who come out there, they throw one punch and they show off and the crowd goes, yeah. And it's like, yeah. Well, why? I feel like, and I'm never trying to say like, oh, I'm better than you or I'm better than anyone else. But it's like, I feel like I can be at the top of any card. I just have that much confidence in myself
right.
And in Griff that I know we have the talent.
Tear the house down, yeah.
Athletically mm-hmm. and in the ring wise. But as far as there's a whole nother aspect to it, which is connecting with the crowd. And sometimes you can take yourself out of it by feeling like the crowd's not into your work. So realizing how the Japanese react to their matches, they love it and they sell out the Tokyo Dome every year and they make so much money with Japanese wrestling in this small country and it's such a big thing, a part of their culture. So when I go and I'm just getting a few claps, I learned to take that and absorb that and being like, okay, this is just a different crowd and they're reacting to my stuff because they haven't had time to invest into me as a character yet. But me getting these claps, I'm treating it like, okay, now I'm in Japan. Now I'm in the Tokyo Dome and I'm making them go, oh, that was pretty good. That's a win. Even though it's a small win, even though I'm not getting that loud pop, oh, that's a small win for me, and I'm taking that.
Mm-hmm. I respect that a lot. I know that you said that you have traveled outside the U.S. for a, you know, wrestling promotion or match or whatever it may be. Where all outside of the U.S. have you guys traveled, and what was that experience like?
So we got to travel outside of the United States to Mexico. It was actually a privately funded show.
El Chapo funded.
It was in Cabo San Lucas. And we were contacted by these people who they have a resort, right? And they so every year they put on this, they have this huge party, and they put on a huge show for all the people that have properties on their resort. And I don't know how much I can actually say because this was a private show. This is just like the best example that I have. And we were down in Mexico. The crowd was probably comprised of about 300 people in this tent that they set up on a golf course. But you had people there like Michael Phelps, Rick Ross, Tim Cook from Apple. I believe Mark Cuban had a property there, but he wasn't actually at the show. But these are the type of people that are at this show.
The A-listers.
Pretty much. And they are not there with their wives and families. This is just kind of like a property owner's type.
Guys weekend.
There was no females in the crowd besides some ringside women, card girls that they had. Escorts, I guess, on the side of the show. So
valets.
Yes, valets. That's a great word. So These are the people, and we actually got to meet a lot of these people. That's probably the best experience we had, was hanging out in Cabo San Lucas, and we actually got to hang out with Michael Phelps, and we were able to, you know, have a few shots and a dinner with him, and just a great conversation. So that's probably one of the best experiences I've had, being able to go down to Mexico. Haven't been anywhere like the UK yet, but I believe you guys reached the UK, don't you guys?
We do. We're very much so.
We're funny. We're highly rated.
It's like 36, right?
I think we're the 36th highly of independent type podcasts that are not
in the UK,
backed by anybody in the UK.
That's awesome.
And we're like 56th in Canada for some odd reason. So the Americans really need to rally and get behind us on this. But
big wrestling fans in the UK. Well, so I was talking with Bill, and he handles all of our bookings. There is a potential possibility that as soon as Griff is better, that Master Machine could be going over to the UK for a booking over there. I'm not quite sure with which promotions yet, but I know that there's a few that are interested that have actually talked to Bill. Well, so that might be happening.
They're rebuilding NXT Europe from the ashes of the old NXT UK. So,
right.
You know, maybe fingers crossed there.
Hopefully. Yeah, but a cool one. So there's definitely some contact there that could potentially happen by the end of this year.
Awesome. So if it is something like that, though, is that like a, well, obviously I know you got to like kind of get the offer or whatever, but is that like a, hey, I got to go live overseas to pursue this dream type thing? And are you willing? I mean, I know that you're going for your dream, but like, that's a whole nother country. Like, what are your thoughts on, like, if I want to make this work, they're saying I got to move here.
Whoever wants to pay me money, I'll move wherever you want me to. It just has to be the right price. The UK, Japan, India, Morocco, South Africa, you name it. Australia, I'm there. I'm there. I'm not saying I'm going to live there for the rest of my life, obviously, but I'll go wherever I can to make a name for myself, to prove myself. And at the end of the day, it's whoever wants to pay the most. You know, it's whoever wants to give me the most bang for my buck, and I will give you everything that I have in return. I give you my body. You know, I give you my life. I know it's cliche, but we do, you know, we risk our lives every time we step into that ring.
Absolutely.
Every time you fall down, every time you climb that turnbuckle, every time you hit these ropes, if you don't hit it the right way, if you don't bounce off these ropes the right way, you can get whiplash. You can crack your neck. It's bad. And some of these ropes, they're not actual ropes, people. Some of them are steel cables wrapped in duct tape. So, I mean, it's really serious stuff. But so I will put my body and my life on the line for this dream that I have, because it's what I want to do, and I'll go wherever that takes me.
Well, and I'll be really honest, with the style of wrestling that I personally have seen you wrestle live, I give it like a mix between like a luchador strong style. And I think that you personally would do absolutely phenomenal in a New Japan. So speak on maybe that, like, what what are your thoughts of even like if New Japan called you yesterday, how would that conversation go? And like, how do you feel about going to Japan for a while?
There, I actually have gotten a lot of information because I'm interested. I would love to wrestle in Japan. It's a dream of mine to wrestle in Japan. Cyrus the Destroyer, who has wrestled a lot down in Georgia, and he's actually wrestled for AML a little bit. He's done two tours now in Japan. He's wrestled for Noah and for All Japan. And
I know who you're talking about.
He's been in the magazines over there. They love him, and he comes back with these great, amazing stories. Me and him are actually very tight. He's been backstage at AEW a lot. I believe he's had one AEW dark match, but I've seen him there a few times. He has lots of friends in the wrestling business, and it's great to talk to Cyrus. But he just has great stories. They're very strict on medical. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be up to date on everything. I think as much as we've talked about getting your blood work done and your physicals and everything for the WWE, they're just so emphasizing health mm-hmm. and the importance of health in that country. So I think I would need to probably just get on top of that a little bit more, making sure that I have everything cleared. I would do it in a heartbeat if I know everything I need to. It's a long flight. From the original time he went out, he had to pay for his own flight there and back, I believe. But once he was there, they put him up in the dojo. You're training every day. So they give you a room and a place to stay, and they feed you. But you have to train every day. You're wrestling, you know, a few times a week. It's kind of like that.
It's your job.
Yeah, it's your job. And I would love to do it. I think it's a great place to cut your teeth, you know, to get just – I would love to be in an environment like that where I have no choice but to be physically active, mm-hmm. you know, every single day. And I feel like you just get into – you naturally get into the best shape of your life. That's what they expect, you know, at New Japan. They don't take no slouches. If you aren't conditioned cardioly, you know, cardiovascularly or muscularly, it's going to show, and they're going to, you know, beat it into you. You're going to get in shape one way or the other while you're over there, by choice or by not, you know what I mean? So I would love to do that. If I got the call to go to Japan, I would accept it in a heartbeat, and I'll see you guys in a few months.
I'll say, with a Japanese audience, not only your style being like a luchador strong style type thing, I think that they would absolutely love and immediately connect with the whole hair and Super Saiyan thing. I think immediately you would be a freaking rock star over there.
Oh, definitely. I think the hair itself, when this hair is spiked up, it connects with people in so many different ways. Like some kids who don't, you know, necessarily understand the Japanese culture, like anime or you know, Dragon Ball Z or whatever. Because I mean, I did draw a lot of inspiration from Dragon Ball for it, but some people will be like, Jack Frost, Jimmy Neutron, Beavis and Butthead, Johnny Bravo. You know what I mean? So it's like whatever floats your boat.
Whatever makes you connect.
Exactly. It's one thing, and I might have one intended way of connecting with people, and other people can connect to it a whole totally different way. It's like I pretty much understand. There hasn't been a time where someone comes up to me saying something about my hair, and it's been different lots of times, that I haven't connected with it. I've connected with almost every single person that has, you know, said something or mentioned something about my hair.
What's the weirdest hair comment you've gotten so far?
Probably just a lot of wrestlers would say that they want to just spike me to see how high I can bounce, whether it's like a DDT or a Canadian or something.
Super weird thing to say.
But they want to see. That probably gives you a lot of cushion. And honestly, it does. It helps when you're when you're taking those head bumps. I'm not going to lie. It helps taking a pile driver a lot easier.
And Lance Archer damn near tried. Pretty much.
So, you know, we've talked about New Japan and all of that. So where do you see Marcus Cross? I'd like a, I'd say almost a by the end of this year plan, then a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan.
Well, I have a question before we go into his 30, 60, 90 here for the job interview we're casting here. It seems like sometimes. I want to talk about your match Tuesday night on Dark. Mm-hmm. Watch that. Good match. Seemed to draw a little frustration from you in certain spots of that match, a little bit of crossed wires. Can you tell me kind of your experience in that match and what you thought about it?
That was my second time working with the Dark Order. That was my first time working with Evil Uno. Second time working with Alex Reynolds and Silver. But I'll say things are very strict when you're backstage there. As far as times, and we ran out of time.
Okay. There,
and when you have 6 people in a match and you don't have much time to showcase, it doesn't really matter what you had intended to go for in your match, when it's time to go, it's time to go. You got to follow the boss's rules. And so I'll just say I didn't necessarily get to show off all of my skills, which is fine because there are people in that match who haven't gotten as much of an opportunity before. And so I'm fine saying, you know, you go for it. We'll make time for you first. Mm-hmm. There's time for me on the back end and I'll get my stuff in, you know? So I try to be a team player best as I can, but when it's time to go home, it's time to go home. You don't want to run overtime. Right. You don't want to keep people long. You don't, that's just going to paint a bad name for you as someone who can't get the job done the right way or isn't willing to do business, yeah, you know, the right way. So I've gotten plenty of opportunities on Dark. That's probably what my 12th, 13th, 14th match, yeah, that I've had on AEW Dark. It's getting to the point now where I go down to Universal Studios and I come out and I don't have an entrance song, but people are like, Marcus, sign this, get knuckle bump, high five, selfie, before, like while I'm coming out to the ring and leaving. So it's like, even the people in Orlando at Universal Studios, I've wrestled there enough now where I'm connecting with them and I haven't won a single match. And none of my matches have gone over 5 minutes, but they like what they see,
yeah,
you know, which is why I'm saying as soon as Marcus Cross gets a chance, especially with Griff Garrison, I know that we're just going to blow everyone out of the water and we're just going to be able to take that brass ring. So what you were saying about, you know, this year, 5 years, 10 years, I'll go backwards. I'll say 10 years from now, top of the world, multiple world championships, millionaire. That's just how it's going to be.
Coming up on his 10th guest appearance on the Swanton Pod, the number one rated podcast in the U.S. and Europe.
This is a nice setup you have here, but I have a feeling we're gonna get a whole new renovation by that time, right?
Yes, sir.
And
that's the goal.
So that's 10-year plan. I say 5-year plan. I'm definitely still, you know, busting it out. I'd like to have made a name for myself. I'd like to be traveling, flying as much as I can, and definitely doing that with my best friend, Griff Garrison. And by the end of this year, I would absolutely love to wrestle tag team matches, whether it's all over the independent circuit, hopefully praying, fingers crossed, that I get at least one opportunity to wrestle on AEW Dark with Griff Garrison, because I know as soon as we get that opportunity to show what we have, you know, people are going to... I'm not trying to be cocky, guys. I'm really not trying to like toot my own horn, but people are going to fall in love with us. You guys are going to love us. You're going to love what we can do. You're going to love what we can do with your favorite teams that you see all over AEW, and you're going to want to see it week in and week out. It's just how it's going to be. We're going to be your household names 10 years from now. But like I said, if you watched my video that I talked about, Jamin Pugh, Jay Briscoe, I wouldn't understand my direction in professional wrestling at this point if it wasn't for him. He made me want to be a tag team wrestler.
That's amazing.
With my best friend. And Griff Garrison, he's my best friend. We're not blood brothers, but we're pretty much brothers.
Couldn't have made you closer.
Absolutely not. And that's what I want to do. I don't care. Honestly, I know Griff has everything in the world that it takes to be the biggest champion of the world. He can be the next John Cena if he wants to and if he sets his heart and mind to it. And I hope he gets that opportunity. It's not necessarily what I want for myself. I just love doing this with my best friend, and that's all I want to do. And I want to say thank you, Jay Briscoe, that match that we had. And Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when we won that fan vote and we got to wrestle you guys, and you didn't know Master Machine was coming for you. You put our head to the curb and you stomped it in, and we got up and we gave it right back to you for about 12 minutes of a hard fought match. I want to say thank you, and thank you for inspiring me to figure out what I wanted to do in professional wrestling. And I'm going to follow in your footsteps, and I'm going to be up there on the Mount Rushmore of tag teams with you and your brother.
I think that is a beautiful way to end the show. Unless you had anything else that you want to put out there for the universe to know about Marcus Cross.
Just keep your eyes open, guys. Marcus Cross and Griff Garrison, Master Machine, whether that's what we're called in AEW or not, that's what we are on the independents right now. Just keep your eyes open for us, man. We're coming. Give us the ball, and we're going to run.
So I just want to say absolutely thank you for coming on. I cannot wait to see what you personally do this year, as well as Master and Machine coming back together once Griff is healed, because I know that y'all have gone through, you know, one's injured, the other's good. Okay, let's do this tag team thing. The other's injured, one's good. So I think that the 2023 is going to be the year of Master and Machine, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, same for me. Thank you for coming on, Marcus. We've been talking about it for a long time. We're glad you finally got you here. And just want to let the audience know, as we always say, pro wrestling is for everybody.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.